We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 362. The West Coast games are over. OVAH for the 2019 season. I know you're happy about that, Scott.
Thank God. Thank God. Because I'm the lunatic that stays up for these stupid games. And not that I want to, because I'm not. I don't really don't. I try to not stay up for them. I'm going to be very honest with you. But I have a problem. I just can't. I can't go to sleep.
Well, the first step to recovery is admitting you have a problem.
I admitted this last year. I admitted this the year before that. I blame you more, I think, at this point. You've known I have a problem. You're just feeding my problem by.
I'm watching my friend go down this
horrible
this bad path.
Not doing a damn
I'm
thing.
Not doing
about
anything.
It. Not a damn thing.
No, I've told you just go to bed.
That doesn't do it. Obviously, that doesn't
just
work.
Just go to bed.
It doesn't work, Andrew. No, I have a problem. Yes. So what it is I get into a place where if I get past the fifth inning and I look up and it's like the sixth inning, that's where I'm like, shit. Because I feel like if I'm in the sixth inning, I'm like
it's almost over.
Yeah,
the game's almost
right.
over, even though it's not almost over.
Even though it's not almost over, I have a big internal conflict, turning off the game with because I did it. I tried to do it in Oakland, and I was the degenerate bastard laying in bed with the phone, you know, like pissing off my wife.
Right. Yeah. That's my move. Like I said last time, I usually throw the game on the radio, and. It's different when you're laying in bed and the lights are off and I literally have the phone on into the last notch. I click one up from complete mute and on, and I lay the phone on my pillow with the speaker pointed directly into my ear so Leanne can't hear anything.
You do know they make headphones, right?
No, but I can't sleep with headphones on.
But you're not sleeping. You're listening on the radio to the game.
But I fall asleep at some point. Oh. It's usually around like the third or the fourth inning that I fall asleep. And then I wake up. And it's 3 o'clock in the morning and my phone is just sitting there.
That sounds like me in sixth grade, falling asleep to John and Susan on the radio. That's literally what I was doing in sixth grade.
Well, I'm 31 and I'm doing that.
Yeah. And they're still on the air. Good for them.
Yeah. 30, you were six, 31 years ago?
No, I was in sixth grade, I said.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So a little different.
Well, they're over. So
I made that up. I don't know how old I was. It was, you know, whenever Jim Abbott's no hitter was, whatever year that was. I was
92.
I was gonna say 91, 92. Yeah, in my head, that's where I was going.
4th of July, right?
So I was 12 years old, 11 years old. Yeah, Susan was wearing her beautiful vest. John had a birthday. George had a birthday. It was a great day.
Little teaser for the final segment. I have a little confession to make about John and Susan. That's going to be our final topic. So that's a pro teaser for you. But it is a big week for us, not just because the West Coast games are finally over, but because we have our final regular season event this Saturday, August 31st, against the A's. Pre-game party is at Billy's. The emails have gone out. We will be transferring tickets on Thursday. As you guys are listening to this, you'll be receiving tickets on Thursday. If this is the first event you are coming to, do not worry. You will get your ticket. We have never left a man outside of the ballpark. We get everybody inside. There's
no man left.
Don't worry
behind.
About
no,
it.
Next man up.
Do not worry about it is what I'm saying. And I get it. People are buying. Maybe it's the first time. Sometimes they're just buying tickets and a friend. Maybe their friend told them, hey, we're going to go to a Bronx Pinstripes event, and that other person has never heard of us. And then they're like, I paid, and I don't have my ticket, and they're freaking out. You get your ticket. Don't worry.
Get your ticket. Yeah, next man up. We don't let anybody outside the stadium to either. We leave nobody, no man behind.
No fathead behind, no man
well,
behind.
We've definitely left fatheads behind. I don't even know
we
which
haven't
ones are
left
still
them
around.
Behind. They were stolen from us.
They've been stolen, yeah, at some point. But no, that's going to be fun, man. I'm really looking forward to it. We have a really good group going. We have about 175 people going to this one. And usually the last one of the year, it starts to die down a little bit just because the Yankees are like in a zone. You kind of know where they are. But there's still that level of excitement here. And I'm excited for that too. But one of the great things that we're doing now, our friends at Blue Point are now taking part in the pregame. So everybody who comes to this game, everybody who has already purchased tickets, because you can no longer purchase tickets, everybody comes, you get a t-shirt. You've probably already gotten your t-shirt unless you signed up after the date, in which we have a whole bunch that we got shipped, you know, close to the bar, and they will be at this at the bar to pick up your ticket, and your drink ticket and your t-shirt. If you ordered like mad late, like yesterday or today, or the, you know, we might not have a shirt for you. We might have to ship it to you. But for the majority of the people, I think we'll have it. But it's going to be at Billy's. I'm pretty sure we're going to be upstairs outside on the deck. That's where we're going to be. We'll have a table set up so that we could come. You could come in, say what's up, check it. We'll check you off. We'll give you the two drink tickets. You go get your pinstripe pilsners. And then we all just hang out upstairs, and it's supposed to be a beautiful day. So it looks like we have good weather, Knock on wood, a lot of good weather.
It's been kind of, we've gotten a preview of the baseball fall weather this week in New York.
And perfect.
I'm not going to lie, it's been nice. But it is going to get a little bit hotter, but not nearly as hot as the last event. It's going to be a beautiful weekend in the Bronx. Like you said, we're going to be there, get there early. We're going to be there around 10:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
For the 1 o'clock game. Pre-game will go from about 10:30 to 12:30. Then we mobilize.
You're saying 10:30. You're saying 10:30. We have documented 11 o'clock, because I think Billy's opens at 11. Don't hold me to that. If you get there at 10:30, you might be able to get in. You probably could get in. You know, let's just say you could get in. Worst case, you hang out for 20 minutes and then you get in. But 11 is what we have documented. So I can't.
There's a lot going on in the Bronx this weekend because there's also the River Ave Street Fair.
Yeah.
So if you get there early, I think they're going to be set up pretty damn early. So there'll be stuff going on at 9 in the morning.
Yeah, there'll be things going on. I mean, I'll be at Billy's at 10. So doing a bunch of stuff, and hopefully they open the doors. But I just want to put that out there in case people show up. Come early. Get there early, especially if you don't have a shirt, because it's basically going to be the guys that get the shirt are first come, first serve, essentially, on how that's going to work. Because it's, you know, a lot of people signed up on the same days. And so we have you know, a certain amount of them, and when they run out, then, you know, it is what it is, and we'll have to send you the shirts. That's why we have a deadline. That's it. The event, last one. I'm really excited for that. It's going to be a lot of fun. I know a whole bunch of people are coming in. Ryan Nakata, our old friend, by the way, who used to do the recaps, is going to be in town.
He was out at the Dodger games, Yankee Dodger games last week.
Yeah, weekend. Ryan was with us from the very beginning in Bronx Pinstripes doing recaps, and then moved to California. So I'm excited to see him as well. But the now we're doing playoff tickets. So we've moved on, and now we're doing playoff tickets. And boy, are we doing playoff tickets. So we've put in our requests with the Yankees. I had a good long conversation with them today about playoff tickets. And basically what's happening is there's a bunch of pre-sales happening. If you can buy tickets, if you have a season pass or if you have a partial season pass, I believe that starts in September 10th. Well, the people that have come to the Bronx Pinstripes events, the BP Crew events, have priority ahead of that. You are going to be able to get tickets in section 205. And we're doing it a little bit differently. We have those, again, set up. We have requests in, so it's not cemented, but it's we're hoping it'll be cemented very soon. That we're going to have tickets for basically every single round going into the World Series. So I'm excited for that. All the priority is going to the BP Crew, the people that have come to the events. Because why? Because we're building a community. It's been a blast getting to know everybody. I know a lot of people have come to multiple events. The people that have are going to be rewarded. We're going to be kind of scaling up and having like a priority list. Basically, the people that have come to more events are going to get first dibs at those tickets. So it's just more of another incentive that we're building this group and this community and this Yankees family that we have going on. More of an incentive to join us, because one, it's a blast and a lot of fun. And two, we're trying to pay it back as much as we possibly can, and grow this community as much as we can too. So I'm really excited for that. And I think that the way that we have this going, the format of these playoff tickets, we're getting, hopefully, fingers crossed, a lot of tickets. And if that happens, then it's going to be unbelievable. So
just so people understand, this is a cheat code for playoff tickets.
Yes, it is.
For people.
Yes, it is.
Because normally, in order to get playoff tickets, you either pay out the ass on a secondary market website, mm-hmm. which all of us have done. Mm-hmm. You and I have done that. We've all done that to get into the building in section 415, last row of the ballpark. Just get me in that stadium. Well, that's not where our tickets are. We're in section 205. Great seat. Or you can have a season ticket license, which is much more expensive than coming to one or two or even six Bronx Pinstripes events.
Yeah.
So this is a cheat code to get playoff tickets.
Right. And
think about that, people.
Oh, and then along the way, you have like a bunch of new friends and have a great time at these games together because that's what's happening. And you get we're starting to travel,
pregame parties.
Yeah, I mean we're
away games.
We're building that up a lot more too. The pregame party. If you haven't noticed, we have a new sponsor for this pregame party, and we're doing it at a new bar. So, you know, writing on the wall, we're doing some new stuff. We're having some fun. We're going out there and hustling, and we're doing it for this group. So, if you're listening and you have not come to an event, first of all, smack yourself in the face because you should have already come to one. But after you smack yourself in the face and you come to, go out there and plan and figure it out. I already know when we're doing our group events for next year. We've already planned it because we have top priority for all basically groups at Yankee Stadium at this point. Like that's what we're building this to. And it's a beautiful thing. So we'll be announcing that at some point in the near future too, and putting those on for sale for 2020. Cause that's where we are. And this whole thing has just been from zero, it was from you and me. Originally, I started Bronx Pinstripes however the hell long ago. You were the first guy I brought on many, many moons ago. And then we've grown from there. We added 2 writers, 3 writers, 4 writers, 5 writers, 6 writers. We went and started doing writer outings. And we started doing breakfast beers for 20 years for the 1996 championship. That's where it started when we started doing these outings. And we had maybe 25 people, 30 people of internal. And then we're like, you know what? Let's open this up. Let's do more for Yankee fans. Let's build a community of Yankee fans and grow this thing. Because why? It's more fun when you're at a game with a lot of people. It just is. The atmosphere is better. It's just more fun. And I'm sorry for talking about this a lot, but I'm very passionate about building this community. This whole thing has been a great time. And now we're at a point where we are able to get playoff tickets for the New York Yankees ahead of the majority of people. Unless you are, you know, you are high up on Wall Street somewhere, you're probably not going to get tickets.
If you're high up on Wall Street, you don't really care about trying to find good deals on playoff
tickets.
No, but
the point is that it doesn't even matter the deals.
I gotcha.
There's a supply and demand. That's it. There's a supply and demand because the brokers are going to go in like a bunch of cockroaches as soon as those public sales open and nobody's going to be able to get their tickets. So
yeah, like you can sneak in. You can sneak in if you are in first in line in that waiting room. If like you got a MasterCard, I know they open it up like a day early.
Oh yeah, they release so many tickets for that sale.
Right, exactly. That's what they don't tell you. They release maybe like 100 tickets, so you got to be first in line. You got to click immediately, and it doesn't always work. But it's funny, as you were talking, on Tuesday night, I went and did something with Craig Mahoney, he's a local artist in the Bronx. He's set up at Twin Eatery, and he does a lot of paintings of Yankees players and Yankees, just different moments in Yankees history. He's a very good artist, but he's doing a little web series, and I came on his show, and he asked us, how did you and Scott meet? And I kind of hadn't thought about it until like I was telling the story. I was like, well, I started my own Tumblr blog, which maybe just my mother was reading, probably not even just my mother was reading. I joined Twitter, had 3 followers. I saw this guy with an NYY Universe handle have like 7 followers. So I was like, oh, that guy's big time. I gotta see what he's all about. And that's how you and I met. We actually met on Twitter.
Yeah.
I bitch about Twitter a lot.
That's true.
But without Twitter,
yeah,
you and I never would have met.
No, that's true. That is how it started. I had a really terrible logo. I definitely had more than 7 followers, but the thing was, that's how it got built. Like I was basically tweeting about the Yankees on that handle, and then I turned it into Bronx Pinstripes after we got threatened to be sued by Major League Baseball and the New York Yankees. So we changed our name, which was a blessing in disguise because our name is way better now. And yeah, that's kind of how the backstory started. But look, bottom line is this thing has come to a really cool place. We've met some really awesome people. That was the goal. And you know, so far I feel like we're accomplishing that goal. A lot of people are now very much invested in this community that we're doing. We have a lot of people on the back end that are busting their butts for this community, for the website, for the podcast. It's really just all inclusive. I call it like an open source project because that's kind of what it is. We all, you know, the fruits are put back into Bronx Pinstripes, and that's how we benefit. We benefit from experiences and meeting for people. So that's where money goes. That's where like all these things go. It goes back into Bronx Pinstripes. We're starting to do a lot more nonprofit stuff. That leads me into what we're doing with Cameron Maben. Cameron Maben's people have seen what we're doing. I've been talking with them a lot. Cameron Maben is a phenomenal guy. This Hug Season shirt. If you haven't bought a Hug Season shirt, go out and buy it. Nobody profits $1. Every single dollar goes to the Dream School in Harlem. This guy, Cameron, is doing volunteering his time, when he's there physically and in person, and then also for these T-shirts and this campaign. So if you haven't gone out, go get your Hug Season shirt. We're collaborating with him. We're working with Cameron Maben. They're on our fan shop, shop.bronxpinstripes.com, if you don't know that. Go there, pick up a T-shirt. Literally every dollar is going. Every dollar that's of profit that after the costs are going to the charter school in Harlem. So a really good thing. And I'm very excited and proud of a lot of things that we've done this year and the people that are working with us. So in case that hasn't been exuded enough already in the first 15 minutes of the show.
Yeah. And just quickly, one more housekeeping item. If you guys are still with us, is the Indochino Legends Suite ticket giveaway that we partner with Indochino on. And you guys, if you have not entered that contest on Twitter or on Instagram, go do that. All you have to do is retweet the post, like the post, tag some friends in it, same on Instagram, and you could win 4 Legends Suite tickets for Monday's game against the Rangers. That's Labor Day. I've never sat in Legends. Have you ever sat in Legends?
No, I don't belong there. I don't belong there.
You're not riffraff. Lon Truss would never let you in.
I am riffraff. They would not let me in because of that.
But we've had the privilege of sitting in very cool areas of Yankee Stadium. I've never been in Legends, so I would love to win this giveaway. I unfortunately cannot win this giveaway.
I have sat in Legends before Legends existed. Does that count?
Oh, you mean at the old stadium?
Yeah.
Yeah, I sat in box seats at the old stadium too because those were attainable if you're just a regular person.
Did you wear an Orioles hat?
No, good Seinfeld reference. We had like 7 last episodes.
Yeah, I didn't even realize we did either.
All right, let's talk about some baseball. They swept the Mariners. Like, duh. The Mariners suck. It's exactly what you should do to the Mariners. But here we are. Houston and the Dodgers are both playing tonight. The Yankees are a game up on Houston and a half game up on the Dodgers. People have been freaking out about the timeout call on Saturday. We talked about it last episode, but what sort of added more fuel to the fire is Major League Baseball actually apologizing to the Yankees and saying, you know what? That shouldn't have been a timeout. Our bad.
Right. Well, I mean, I'm glad they said that. I'm glad we all thought that. Like the last episode, I was trying to go over the other side of it to try to like see what they saw. And I feel like I understood what they saw. Doesn't mean I thought it was the right call. It wasn't, it was clearly not the right call when you see the call in front of you on television, you can tell. But when these guys are live in action, like there's no review on that. At least I don't think of like where he is in the baseline. The problem I have here is that like, okay, we admit that was wrong. Great. First step, like you said before, admission, right? Admit that you have a problem. Admit that we did it wrong. Okay. Well, why was it wrong? Why was it wrong? Because we have all these things in place now that are supposed to fix that are supposed to create a situation where if there is a tough play, if there's one that we're uncertain about, we can double check it with people that are seeing different angles. Like that was the reason the technology was in place, right? And now, kind of like the way the NFL has done, I know we referenced it last time too, is certain plays are not reviewable, which is stupid. And they've changed that this year to a certain extent with the pass interference thing. So now what Major League Baseball needs to do is they need to amend. They need to look at it. They need to audit what they've been doing with replay and fix it because it's broken. It's broken. And they need to fix it.
But the problem with that play is not that it wasn't reviewable. It's that the umpire called timeout because even if it was reviewable, the Yankees run wouldn't have scored.
Why? No.
Because you can't assume that Gleyber Torres was going to run home and that Max Muncy wasn't going to throw the ball home.
That's not true. There are certain assumptions that are made in baseball. There are absolutely, on a certain play, there are certain assumptions. And depending on when he called time.
The only assumption I can think of is that a ground rule double, a guy moves up 2 bases. That's not really a huge assumption. You can't, quote, assume a double play. You know that whole saying? They can't.
They can't assume a double play, but they can call a guy out if there's obstruction at second base. They can call both guys out.
The problem with this situation was not that because by the letter of the rule book, once an umpire calls timeout, all runners stop and go back to the base they previously occupied. So Gleyber Torres, once timeout is called, has to go back to third base. That is what the rule book says. Major League Baseball was not saying that the rule is wrong. They were saying the umpire should not have called timeout in that situation because there was still an active play going on the field. And just because Max Muncy is trying to win an Oscar by rolling around at second base, is not a legitimate reason for an umpire to stop play when it is the ninth inning and you're down by one run and Gleyber Torres is a third of the way down the field.
Right.
So the problem is that the umpire called timeout. He should not have called timeout in that situation. If they reviewed it, that's not review. It's like review would have done nothing for the Yankees in that situation.
Yeah, I mean, there's partially, I guess, if that's the case.
It's like an early whistle in the NFL. That's why it's like when you hear a referee blow the whistle when a guy is like, quote, wrapped up. It's like he wasn't wrapped up.
But it's the opposite of that because this is you. It's a late whistle and the guy was already, you know, across the goal line or like 3 inches from the goal line.
I even get whistles in the NFL because there's guys out there running into one another. There's no reason to call timeout when there's active play, when there's active base runners running the bases.
Right.
This is not like a batter steps out and wants time because he's got a bug in his eye.
Yeah, no, no.
This is not that.
It's definitely, it was clear that they screwed it up. It was just a matter of what they saw and thought at the time. And they called timeout, I think, based on the injury. That's what they thought they were doing. And then everything else kind of fell from there where everybody goes back. So it is what it is. You know, whatever. They still should have gotten the run in, bottom line.
They still should have gotten the run in. But if it comes down to Yankees-Dodgers for the World Series,
yeah,
and the Dodgers end the season with one more win than the Yankees, which would give them home field advantage,
yeah,
people are going to lose their goddamn
mind. Well, they really shouldn't, because one, that would have tied the game. That's first of all. And second of all, you should look at Mike Tauchman and Gary Sanchez for not doing their jobs. So bottom line, Yankees should have done it, and it would have guaranteed nothing because it was a tie game. It would have been a tie game. So,
well, people are not rational.
It would have been a tie game on the road. I'm trying to walk them off that ledge because they really shouldn't be there. Not a good place to be for that particular instance.
And as if that wasn't enough for savages versus umpires, is Guerin's toe tap not being legal, but actually is legal. The whole Monday night debacle with that, where it was so obvious, like you were saying before we started recording, because Guerin used to be with Seattle this year. This was them, I think, trying to play mind games because they knew it's been a thing earlier. It was a thing between a game between the Mariners and the Athletics earlier this season, where it was like a 15-minute delay on the field because of this toe tap. And all the brain power in Major League Baseball spending 15 minutes to try and figure out if this toe tap is legal or not. It's like, I love sometimes, love hate. I have a love hate relationship with this kind of stuff in Major League Baseball because they can be so archaic. It is hilarious.
But so they weren't even, I don't even think they were really like talking about if it was legal or not. I think what was happening is that from the bench, from the Seattle bench, they told them, hey, there's a balk. He's hitting the ground twice. The motion is deceiving. That's a balk. So as soon as they said that, now umpires got to go out there and talk to him and see what the deal is. This is the second time Siri has picked up on my stupid phone while I'm on this show. They got to go out there and talk to him and say, look, this is what it is. This is the rule. And then Guerin's like, wait, whoa, hold on. First of all, I used to play here. They're fucking with me right now. Like that's what's currently happening. They understand this is legal. They understand what I'm doing is legal. So let me tell you what I'm doing is legal. And then I think the umpire was trying to tell him, well, okay, if you do this, this and that, this is legal. And they had a discussion about that. And you can see him, Guerin, covering his mouth, trying, like laughing, like knowing, not laughing, but like annoyed laughing that the dugout is doing this. And it was just too long of a discussion. Boone rocks out. He's like, what are we doing here? Why is this a thing? Like, we all know that he used to play here and that these guys are basically just trolling him, essentially. So it took way too long. Then they called a balk afterwards, which there was no difference in what he was doing.
Nope.
Major League Baseball admitted that too.
That's just umpires caught with their pants down, not knowing what to do. And then the umpire, like, he's like, oh my God, everyone in the stadium is watching me. Balk, got to do something. I got to call something. There's a balk. Because a balk, in my mind, is trying to deceive a runner. If you're doing the same thing every time, the same motion every time, that's not deceiving the runner.
As long as the first time it's not, yeah. As long as the first time it's not deceiving the runner, and that's
it. If every other time Guerin did a toe tap. If it's a legal move.
Well, no, I don't even think that because it's not even that because you look at what Nestor Cortes does and he does some deceiving shit in that sense, but he's not breaking any rules. So
he's doing a long, but he's not, touching the ground twice.
He's quick pitching and he was actually messing with them a little bit too because he actually raised his leg up, brought it down to like half inch above the ground, then raised it back up and then went and pitched. Like he just changes his
motion.
What do you think
about that kind of stuff though?
If I was a batter, it would piss me off. It would annoy the shit out of me, and I would probably like my mouth would just run.
If the Yankees are facing a pitcher who does that, we're roasting that guy.
Want to kill him. Yeah.
Right.
Because it's annoying.
So Nestor Cortez or Guerin does it, and we're like, oh, that's kind
of
fun.
I think Guerin's different in the sense that his is part of his windup and part of like the way that he throws.
Well, I agree. He does it consistently, yeah. But Nestor Cortez is a great example. Sometimes he quick pitches. Sometimes he slow pitches where he's pulling drawing a blank on his name. Used to pitch for the Red Sox. He used to do like a full turnaround.
Oh, yeah. I don't care what he does. Daisuke?
No.
Daisuke would do that shit too.
No, it was...
Either way, the whole point is like when he is doing those motions, yes, this is very clear. Like it's so obvious. If they're part of my team, it doesn't bother me as much. Like Edwin Encarnacion with the whole parrot thing. Like I hated that. I thought it was stupid when he was doing it against me. But now I see him doing it and he's like, oh, he's actually walking the parrot. Like, oh, that's cool. It's so different. The emotions are very different when they're on your team. But
Louis Tiant.
Okay.
Okay. What were you saying?
Louis Tiant didn't even pitch in your era.
No, but you know how I knew about it? Will Ferrell threw out a first pitch.
Yeah, and he did
at Fenway Park, and did that. I mean, I knew about Louis Tiant other than Will Ferrell, but like Will Ferrell did it like a few years ago.
Right. Yeah, I wasn't thinking anybody back then when you said it.
That's your era.
No, it's not.
So what happened in the Seattle series? Yankees bashed a ton of home runs. Surprise, surprise. They've set a record for Major League Baseball team home runs in a single month. Aaron Judge has now 100 home runs in his career. We saw Gary Sanchez get his 100th home run over the weekend. The biggest storyline offensively from the Yankees is definitely the fact that Aaron Judge's slump is officially over. Because on this road trip, he was absolutely mashing 14 for 37, 6 home runs. He's pulling the ball again. He just, I don't know if he flipped a switch. Whatever happened between the last game against Cleveland and then the first game against Oakland, I don't know. Home cooking. He's a California boy, California dreaming. He just loved those rays of sunshine. I don't know what the hell happened, but he looks like Aaron Judge again.
Nothing happened. It was time. That's it. He needed time to get his swing back. He needed time to break off some of the bad mechanics, some of the muscle memory shit that was there from when he got hurt. Bottom line, that's what happened. He had an oblique injury. The oblique injury affected the way that he swung a bat. The way that he would, you know, the way that he rehabbed back, he probably, when he was rehabbing, wasn't able to take, I guarantee he wasn't able to take his normal A swing. And when you're back and trying to be very productive and trying to be the guy that you were, you have to get back to that full motion, whether it's restrictive because of an injury or whether it's restrictive because you haven't done it in a long time consistently. And because of that, because of the muscle memory, because baseball is such a sport that you have to repeat over and over and over and over again to be consistent, it took time. He needed a spring training essentially to get back and to get into his groove. And, you know, like,
well, it was a little weird because he comes back. We documented this a few episodes ago. He comes back from the initial oblique injury. And while he didn't have the same power output, his batting average was actually up. He was still getting a ton of hits. He was hitting the ball hard, and he was walking a ton. So he still looked to be having really quality at-bats, and he just wasn't getting the same launch angle. That was really the identifiable thing, is that the launch angle was noticeably different, which was why he wasn't hitting as many home runs. Then he went into his really bad slump towards the end of July, in the first few weeks of August, where he looked completely lost. And then you say nothing happened. Fine, maybe nothing happened and he just needed time. Guys snap out of slumps. Sometimes all it takes is one at bat. It could have legitimately been a mashed home run to left field where he's like, ooh, I feel good. You know how you're out on the golf course and you're on the seventh hole and you haven't hit a good shot all day and then you pipe a drive and you're like, okay, let's go. And you start to relax and feel a little bit more comfortable. Could be the same sort of thing.
I mean, I usually shank the next shot, and then I'm like back down to zero. So golf, for I think all of us, is a bad example on that. But
go with the
no. But I understand that. But that's also part of getting your mechanics back. That's because you have to feel your body getting to the place where you want it.
Part
to be.
Of it's confidence, though. It's all. I think it's confidence in his.
It's all part
I think it's
of
confidence
it. It's all
that he's not going to. But I also think it. You say it's not injury related, and while
I'm saying it's not maybe, an injury,
not an injury, but it can be injury related.
Well, now you're
in the
being
sense,
now you're just talking in semantics because yes, of course, all
no, it, because the whole
it
time
it can be a byproduct
said,
of coming back from an injury.
No. What I was saying, what I said from the beginning is, I don't think the Yankees run Aaron Judge out there if he's still injured. And we agreed on that. But what I did say is, what if Aaron Judge is not taking his A-plus swing because he's worried about re-injuring himself? I think that is a fair thing. That could have been in his mind. You're shaking your head no.
I'm shaking my head no because when you're fully back from an injury, then you're cleared by the doctors. They're basically telling you,
you
what
know
you
that's
do
not
right
how
now.
It goes. That's not reality.
But the thing is, here's the deal. When you're being so emphatic about going to right field, and I do believe it was part of the game plan when he came back to slowly get back into his swing, I think it was easier for him to be able to go to right field, at least just take advantage of some of those pitches.
Why was it easier?
It's just a different swing. I think it's a little bit more of a protective swing.
Why was it a protective swing? Okay, interesting.
When I say protective, I mean shorter. I don't mean protective of the body.
Shorter. Why was he taking a shorter swing?
Exactly. To make contact. It's,
why was he just trying to make contact?
What you're saying is absolutely stupid right now. Just please stop. Because what you're trying to do is you're trying to say that it's a shorter swing because he's hurt and because of an injury. That's not what we're saying here. It's the same. It would be the same thing as choking up on the bat. It's less of a plane that you need to get to make contact to the bat. You can make a lot more contact when you're choking up because of that reason. It has nothing to do with an injury. So get that out of your brain. What I'm saying is the shorter swing to make better contact, you're losing power on that swing. It's not the Aaron Judge power swing that he normally does going to center field, left field. It's a different type of swing where he's cutting it down a little bit. I think the front step is a little bit different. There's different things that he can do. You can have it.
He wasn't losing exit velocity.
No, but you
he's
can
still
have
hitting the ball
you
hard.
You can still hit the ball hard, but it's changing the trajectory. It's changing like the angle,
yeah, launch angle,
it's changing
launch
a lot
angle.
Of things.
That was the biggest difference.
So when you shorten your swing, it's going to change your bat path, and because you're doing that, it's going to change the flight of the ball as well. There's a lot of things they can hit. He's still strong as shit. And he's going to hit the ball hard. And that's one of the big reasons why you could tell, like, that was what I was looking at when I was saying he's not hurt. Like, he's still smoking the ball. A hurt guy doesn't smoke the ball.
I don't think you're listening to me.
I know exactly what you're saying. And I know you're not saying he's hurt, but what you're saying is it's a byproduct and that they were trying to protect the injury by doing a shorter swing. And I don't believe that to be the case.
There's no way. This is not a conspiracy theory. This is just understanding how humans can react and recover from injuries. I mean, on a very much smaller scale, if you hurt your shoulder, you're not going to, when the doctor says, okay, yes, you're good to go back into the, you're not going to go put up 225 again because that's what you were doing before your shoulder
I
injury.
Understand that.
You're going to take it easy.
But they're not protecting a physical injury. They're what they're trying to do is get him mentally back to the place where he's confident and in his swing. I'm not saying confident in his body, but confident in his swing. Because there's a lot of times where you're just not there, your timing's bad, so you're being hesitant and giving your full swing. You want to go back to the golf analogy? How many times have you gone up to the tee box and taking more of like a square-to-square swing, just trying to get the goddamn ball straight, and being scared on taking it all the way back and going forward because you might miss the ball and shank it and have to, you know, whip your dick out walking up to the ladies' tees.
So you know what's funny? I had the worst golf season of my entire life this year. I think I played five rounds of 18 and a couple rounds of 9, which is more than I normally play.
I don't play 9. I don't like. I judge people to play 9, but keep going.
Okay, whatever.
They
anyway,
probably have underscores in their Twitter name.
What was I saying?
Golf. You're playing golf and you're
yes.
bad at golf.
Worst golf season of my life. You're talking about taking a shorter swing. Yeah. I found the last time I went out and played that I was trying to do that and actually playing worse.
Well, that's because you're a mental
patient.
In my head mentally.
Well, last couple of tee boxes, I let it air out. And they were better swings. I was hitting a more fluid swing, a more in rhythm, balanced swing, and there were better shots.
Look, first of all, I really don't want you to sit here and compare yourself to an athlete. Okay, let's just not do that. Second of all,
I don't know
when,
if golfers
when
are
you're
athletes.
Trying when you're trying to be have more control and you're hitting a ball, whether it's with a golf club or a baseball bat, if you choke up on that and make it shorter and make your swing shorter, you're going to make more contact and you're going to have more control over it. It's science. It's why you see coaches with the fungal bat choking up, taking short swings, controlling the ball to where they want to get it, to the infield and the outfield. It's why you go up and a lot of pro golfers teach that if you want to hit a good chip shot, putt it. Why? Because it's a simple motion. It's controlled. And if you putt it, you'll have more control over your hands. It's a shorter motion. You start going back, there's a lot more room for error. So there's just, it just is what it is. Like, there's no debating about that. And I think when he's starting off, he's shortening his swing a little bit to try to get that feeling back, to try to get that control back. And now, yeah, he's got more confidence. He's feeling good. The swings, he's unleashing it, and he's making the contact where he thinks the barrel of the bat is going where he expects it to go. So let it rip, baby.
He looks much more comfortable, but he does not appreciate the questions about why he looks more comfortable, because he had another weird sort of interaction with Meredith in the post-game conference on Tuesday. Tuesday night's
game. Interviews on the field, yeah.
This was an interview on the field instead of an interview in the clubhouse like the one in Oakland. And he was very short with her, a little standoffish. And I watched the video and because it was something was posted in our Facebook group, like, oh, Judge hates Meredith. And I watched the video, and I was about 75% through the video. I was like, all right, this is just normal Aaron Judge being humble, just giving praise to the rest of the teammates. And then towards the very end, he did seem a little short. I don't know what it's about. I don't think he has a beef with Meredith, but I think he's tired of questions about why he doesn't look right or didn't look right.
All right, so I got a couple things. Jeter used to do the same thing, by the way. Like, literally...
He did, but it was more coy with Jeter.
He would give short remarks. Like, every time I see Judge in an interview, even still, I swear to God, they're spitting images of each other when they talk. Here's my theory on this. I think it's orchestrated. I think they're having fun with everybody. I think if you look at the body language and look at some of the faces, because Aaron Judge is not a good actor, he's a great baseball player. Probably a better human being from what I know. Not a good actor. It's not a good thing.
Wait, you think him and Meredith are
I think there's a little this? I think there's a little back and forth. They understand what's happening. There's a little bit, sometimes Meredith has these pointed questions. I think they've laughed about it behind the scenes, knowing that these questions are going to come because they're probably not from her. I'm sure she thinks of some of them, but a lot of them are probably coming from a producer in her ear of some sort, or they rehearse them beforehand and they come from a group. So she knows what questions are going to ask, but I also think she comes up, or she has a bunch that are probably just like waiting for whatever situation so she can bust them out. And yeah, I think that there's a little bit of that. Like, I could see like a tiny smirk behind Judge's, you know, shortness. I saw enough of a smirk where I'm like, wait a minute. And then even at the end, Meredith looking back at the camera, a little bit different, a little bit interesting. Like, some could say, like, you know, maybe it's just her, like, I can't believe Judge is still giving me attitude. Or, or they know what they're doing.
I don't know about that. I
can see them having fun
smirk.
Like that. Do you not remember the time when Meredith was in the dugout and the Judge is like just coming back and like doing like the thing behind her and like
doing the wave behind her, peek around the clubhouse door.
They've had some fun with the cameras and like, you know, they kind of play off of each other sometimes.
Okay. I mean, that's a different take on it.
You think Greg Bird is in the minor leagues for this long for injuries, right?
It's because Judge stole his girl.
Maybe Judge is Mr. Steal Your Girl, and now the organization is like, you know what? We have one face of the franchise, and that's Aaron Judge. We got to keep Greg Bird away. Put him on an island fishing with a cat in as far south in Florida as you could possibly go. Maybe we'll never see him again.
If Greg Bird is not going to be the lefty swinging first baseman, Mike Ford is, because he's been raking 9 home runs since he got called up. And he had a kind of a fun post-game press conference with Meredith this afternoon after the game. She said, what does it talk about this team? You know, I think the question was, what does it say about this team that you lost 3 in Oakland and then ended up above 500 on the road trip? And he kind of jokes like, well, I guess we just don't like playing in Oakland. Like, that was his answer.
maybe it's that true. Maybe they're like, this place is a dump. I hate it.
Yeah.
Let's just get out of here, and you're not getting my best effort.
Yeah.
It's possible. We'll see how they play against Oakland when they're at Yankee Stadium. That will be more of a telling fact that if they handle that team.
And it's a good time. They're probably going to use the off day to get some rest. You need the off day to get some rest. I need some rest. The best way to get rest is with Sleep Number. When was the last time you really slept great? Isn't it strange that we'll try just about anything to sleep better when it actually could be time for a new mattress? If you aren't getting the quality sleep you deserve, I recommend My Bed Sleep Number Bed. Right now at Sleep Number stores, it's the biggest sale of the year. All beds are on sale, and queen mattresses start at only $899. And if you're gonna shell out $900 for something, do it for a mattress, something you use every night, every day of the year. People are like, oh, I don't want to spend $900 on a mattress. Dude, when you average it out for like the years that you use it, it's very, very affordable per day instead of some other things you're spending a lot of money on.
I'm not gonna lie. When I went to one of these beds, like, it was a game changer, because the fact that you can have different firmnesses on one side of the bed and the other side of the bed, especially if you're married and you have a significant other that's there, you both have your particulars, you both have your things. You got to make sure that you're both comfortable, because that's where you're sleeping for the rest of your life, if all works out. And if that's the case, you better make sure it's good and something that's going to last a long time. So if you're spending $899, go out there, make a good purchase, make sure it's going to last you. And you know, the Sleep Number beds, they make sense for your movements and you automatically adjust effortlessly. So make sure that you're comfortable all night, both of yous. Will you love it? Just ask JD Power. Sleep Number has been ranked number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses. For the 2018 award information, visit jdpower.com. Come in now for the biggest sale of the year, and for a limited time, save 50% on a Sleep Number 360 limited edition smart bed. You'll only find Sleep Number at one of their 575 Sleep Number stores nationwide. Find the nearest one by you at sleepnumber.com/Bronx.
And while you're in there, pick up a couple pillows. They're great pillows as well.
They're great pillows.
So let's talk about two very important starts, Tanaka and Paxton starts. Tanaka struggled his last time out against Oakland. He came back, rebounded against, ate up a bad lineup in the Mariners. 7 innings, no runs, 3 hits, 1 walk on 106 pitches. It was a dominant performance. As expected, going up against Kikuchi. I mean, how many times do we have to see this narrative play out where it's a Japanese rival? It used to be Yu Darvish. Now it's Kikuchi.
Kikuchi.
And Tanaka steps up.
I mean, I love it. So, I was really trying to find a good gift for this, and I couldn't find a good one. But it's like Kikuchi's like, you know, disgrace at this point, falling on the sword. You know, at the end, what are you doing? You're going up against the and
he didn't have the pine tar.
An icon, yeah, no pine tar. Going up against the icon, in a time zone that's probably a little bit more easy for the Japanese people to watch. You know, they're all geared up for this. And you know what Tanaka does? He's like, this is my island. It's mine. I own it. And he comes out there.
Island?
And he comes out there and he...
Oh, Japan.
And he,
yeah. I was like, what are you talking about?
Come on, man. Stay with me here. And was dominant. Was absolutely dominant going out there. Knowing... You could tell when he would miss a location on a pitch, he was getting mad at himself. Like, he was visibly mad. Well, and I know we've seen that more this year a little bit, but I think he turned it up a notch knowing what he's doing here. He understands what's at play here. Like, he knows he's the leader in the clubhouse. He's the guy. And he can't give up that title, especially to a guy named Kikuchi.
And and I think what we're seeing is he's experimenting with his splitter grip, which we got news about a few weeks ago. And then there was another article posted in The Athletic this week. And this I thought was a very interesting tidbit from it. So Tanaka was reluctant to change the grip on his splitter midseason, but after picking up a baseball from earlier in this season, after picking up a baseball from an earlier season, so prior to this year, he realized he simply couldn't get enough traction on the seams of this season's baseball. That's how different the baseballs are this year versus previous years. That Tanaka has to change his grip on the most important pitch he throws because he's not getting the same movement, the same grip, the same action.
Look, I'm really glad that we kind of figured this out and we all understand now.
Figured it out in August instead of October.
Figured out that the baseballs are different. I mean, it's not like it hasn't been a narrative all season long.
I mean, there was a rocket scientist that posted like a 900-page essay on it.
I mean, who's got time to read that? Give me the
Cliff Notes version.
The too long, yeah. Don't read version of it. But the
TLDR, baseball's different.
The thing is, you know, like, I would have liked to see Tanaka hold the ball maybe before August from last year and then this year and see what the difference is.
Maybe not a lot of... maybe not a lot of 2018 baseballs are lying around the clubhouse.
I'm sure you could go to like Cooperstown.
It's like collect. It's like collector's items.
You could find, like, you know, put like a call out on Twitter for the fans to bring a ball. It, you know.
Like, so, hey, who caught a foul ball in 2018?
Yeah, or holler at me. Who's the nerd who went out and bought one? You know, just to have the 2018 ball, because I'm sure those people exist. Go get that guy, the home run catching guy who goes out there and knocks kids over to catch home ball, and have him give you one of the balls that was hit by, you know, some schmuck that got sent down to AA, and, you know, figure it out. Bottom line, figure it out. So the fact that they're comparing these things now is a little strange. But I don't care.
I mean, this is not news. Do you remember Cohen in the broadcast did this like in March? Not March. June.
This is what I'm saying. Like, why are we just talking about this now? Like, why are we changing the grip now? All the things were there to do this experiment. This is not like this is an experiment that could have happened a long time ago. But I'm glad they figured it out. Good timing. You know, we need it right now. And the fact that he is getting the velocity's down a little bit. The fact
that it's been declining.
But I mean, with the new grip, like it's not the same pitch. It's a little different. I think it's close enough where he can do very well with it, because it's getting the downward action. That's the most important thing. You get that downward action in your Tanaka. Yeah. You could take a mile or two off that fastball, and it's really not as big of a deal as long as you can show it. So. You know, I think it's a. I'm glad. I'm very happy. They've gotten to the root of the issue, and let's just hope it continues. Let's just continue to monitor this. But good time to get
hot. This is not the first start he changed his splitter.
I understand that.
He's been doing this for a few starts, and he struggled his last time out. And I think that's what we're going to see, him going through ups and downs with this splitter grip. Let's hope he goes through all the downs in the rest of the season.
Kind of like spring training.
Figure it out.
Kind of like Judge going through the motions, trying to get that A release spot. Trying to get that A grip, trying to get that A swing.
But I think this is kind of like to a bigger point that baseball, I mean, baseball can look at this. They can look at a number of other different things from this year and say, oh, we done fucked up.
Yeah. I mean, well, did they? Because offense is up. So maybe that's intentional. You know, like I probably think they did that on purpose.
Are ratings up?
Yeah, but you can't predict the ratings. You can do what you think are going to boost ratings. And, you know, maybe they had a meeting and when they concluded the meeting and all clapped and walked out of the huddle, they said offense. Offense is going to do that. So let's make the balls tighter.
I know. And we've talked about this 1,000 times. But I don't think this brand of baseball is a better product than previous seasons.
It's not. It's not better. There's more of a... a chance that a bad or a mediocre player can show that he's better than he really is. I think that's
more overall offense, more overall home runs. I get that. I get that on the sound of that. That sounds good on a large scale, on a bird's eye view. That sounds good. But when you watch it day to day, to me, it has not been a better product.
The problem for me when you have a ball like this that flies out at the rate that it's doing is that when a pitcher makes a good pitch and a batter makes a you know, not a good swing, but puts an okay swing on it, they're still going out of the park. Like they're being rewarded for bad swings still. And pitchers are not being rewarded for, you know, especially fly ball pitchers. They're pretty much in a shitty situation right now with the way that they pitch, because they have to change things drastically, like on the fly. Yeah. And batters really,
it's all about missing
batters. Don't have to do any changing. They go up there and do the same thing they were doing. They see ball, hit ball, and then it's just going further. So. Yeah, it's not a great time to be a pitcher.
No, and it was a good night for Tanaka. Weird day for Paxton, who was starting against Justice Sheffield. Paxton only gave up one hit, but he walked five guys. He just completely lost the strike zone in one inning. It was the inning he gave up the home run, but he walked four guys in one inning, threw a wild pitch. I don't really know what happened.
It's a miracle that he got out with two runs in that inning.
It is, thanks to also Sanchez throwing a runner out in that inning.
Yeah.
But it could have been a lot worse for him. So, yeah, it looks okay, five innings and only a couple runs allowed. But it was a very weird – this is not a type of breakdown that we have seen from Paxton. It's not like he's – we've seen the first inning problems. We've seen sort of the home run ball mislocation. We haven't just seen him lose the strike zone in the middle of an inning, middle of a game.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those that he did, you know, end up okay at the end of the day with the amount of runs they came across, and he would still kept his team in a position. And when you walk that many guys, you know, like put those walks as hits, and I don't think people are looking at it as funky. But the fact that he did walk and lose the strike zone like he did, you know, it's that was concerning for that inning. But at the end of the day, it's a base runner. You know, if those are singles, I think people are looking at it differently. He limited the damage, got through, you know, a chunk of the game, and still gave him an opportunity. The Yankees an opportunity to win. So again, it kind of goes back to those one of those starts where not your great stuff, but still got out there. But that's two in a row now that we've seen of him doing that. We need to go, or I'm sorry, not two in a row, two of three.
Yeah, two of three, because he was so dominant against the Dodgers and had no command issues.
Yeah.
So
it's just a weird thing. It's like he lost his grip.
And also think about the situation for Paxton. First time back to Seattle, first time facing his old team.
I don't know how much that plays into it though, because he looked really dominant for the first three innings. Like he looked like he was about to just mow through. He had a no hitter going. Like looked like he was dominant. So I don't know how much the pressure really fell into that, honestly. I think once you get through that first inning, because if you told me that happened in the first inning, then I would say, yeah, absolutely. Not only has he had first inning problems, but now he's back home. Like, now we got a problem here. We have a head case situation. I didn't see that. I think he, you know, lost something. Like, there was something that happened where he lost the strike zone and just couldn't get it back. You know,
I'm going to chalk it up to a fluke, because we haven't seen it this year. We have not seen that happen this year.
Yeah, I'm not concerned about it. Although it does take a lot for me to get concerned about something, so. Take that as you will.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a helpless feeling to watch as your pitcher's doing that, where he's just walking guys. Like, hits, you can at least be like, okay, I'm mad. Like, go do something. Like, walks are just like, oh my God, throw the ball over the plate already.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
And another thing that's worrisome from this game is that Gio left with left groin tightness. Didi had to come in, who had not been in a game since Sunday, being hit by pitch by Kershaw. So, I mean, good news is Didi's fine. He was able to play. Bad news is now we got to think about Gio. And it's like Luke Voit's coming back on Friday. He's been mashing in AAA. It seems like he's healthy. Okay, is now Gio going to be the sacrificial lamb? Like, are we going back to this narrative where one guy back, one guy down?
I mean, maybe. Didn't we see some of this from Gio earlier? There was like some tenderness in the hip, groin area. Like, I remember him pulling up at second base one time, and we all thought that he was, like, it looked like he was shot. But then someone said he just had to take a dump. And then, you know, he finished the game. I feel like there's been tightness in that groin at some point this season. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm not remembering correctly. But
I mean, every player has that.
I mean, at this point, when you exactly you're talking about, and Gio Urshela has probably played more games at a high level than he ever has. So we're looking at that, and everybody's hurt because it's late in the season. It's baseball. These guys are going through a marathon at this point. But you know, I'm pretty sure he had something like this in the past, whether it's to this extent or not. So you hope the MRI comes back clean, number one. And that he can, you know, a little bit of rest will get him to a good place, because I think the Yankees, especially with Voit coming back, do have that luxury of resting some guys if they need it.
Well, yeah, what they can do now is they're probably going to sit Urshela if he's not.
I don't expect to see him this weekend.
No, so they're going to sit him, and then rosters expand on Sunday.
Yeah.
So they can get some more infielders in there, and then it's not a big deal because of the September call-ups. And Voit's going to come back, but it will be interesting. What do they do if Voit's back and Urshela might not be able to play for 2 days? Do they 10-day IL Urshela, or do they just suck it up and play with an extra short bench? Or are they going to send
down Mike
Ford?
You mean for Friday and Saturday?
For Friday and Saturday, because you're going to send down Mike Ford. And then Ford will be back for September call-ups. You know, it's kind of it's weird timing with the September call-ups right around the corner, this Urshela thing, and Voit ready to come back.
It seems like because the roster's expanded, it's an easy 10-day DL. Because you're not going to be – you have reinforcements coming up anyway.
You're only short – you're only in a pinch for 2 days in that scenario.
Yeah, well, and either way, like you don't have Gio Urshela. Like, that's a problem. You don't have that particular player. But you do have other guys coming up,
are able to
fill it in. Plus, like, you're getting more people, so it's not. I don't think it's as worrisome, because obviously LeMahieu can go over to third, and you lose nothing.
Yeah,
and with Voit coming back, we have a first baseman again. And Mike Ford.
And Mike Ford, Mike Ford's been hitting. I mean, he's
smoking the ball.
So. It's at the point with Mike Ford and his offense, it's that, okay, if Voit comes back or if Encarnacion comes back and they're not 100% and not producing, you got to think about choosing Mike Ford over those guys as long as he keeps hitting.
look, at this point, I think what they're doing with this roster is they're trying to get as many guys healthy as possible. They're trying to get as many people ready to go and playing baseball as they can. And then they're going to see what they have. And some guys are going to be shit out of luck, and it's going to be a squeeze because of numbers. But other guys are going to see, like, okay, this guy's back, but is he really at a point where we can rely on him to be healthy? Because we do have this other guy like Mike Ford, who's been coming up and mashing, like, hit like 23 home runs or something like that in the minor leagues. Now he's hit, how many did you say? Nine in the pros.
Nine in 106 at-bats.
So you have a guy like that who's mashing at this point, and you have guys who are coming back from injury. So like, you're trying to make the decision on what's better and what's not better. And I think the best thing about that is that you have an embarrassment of riches with talent, and you're just going to now have to see who's hot, who's not, who's healthy, who's not, and figure that out.
I love how the people always say Mike Ford, he looks like a hitter. I love that.
Do they?
Because he's a fat guy.
He's not a fat guy.
He doesn't look like an athlete, so he looks like a hitter. That's just classic. That's classic baseball cliche talk.
Mike Ford is not a fat guy.
No, he's fat.
No, he's not. He's not.
Yes,
he's a freaking truck.
He's fat.
You're very wrong. I saw him in person when he was doing a rehab, or when he was in AAA.
I did too.
And I saw him like literally. I was sitting behind the plate watching him. All of his body weight is below his. He's like hips, legs. Just like his legs are tree trunks. And then he goes up. He's built, bro. He's fucking huge. I don't know why I'm dropping F bombs, but the guy is not fat.
Because you haven't slept. No, Mike Ford has a gut, okay? He's not morbidly obese. He's not CC fat, but he's fat. This is bullshit. He's listed at 6 feet, 225 pounds. Yeah. I would say he's 200.
What you're doing is you're fat shaming people is what you're doing.
I'm not fat shaming.
You don't like fat people. You don't like short people. You don't like people with freckles. When does it end?
I don't like that. You made that freckle thing.
No,
up.
I didn't.
I don't like when baseball, baseball reference or like programs, they don't accurately list size and weight. Because like I remember for a long time, David Ortiz was listed at 220 pounds, which is laughable. And Ford is listed at 225. I'd say he's closer to 255.
They don't change that stuff. That's the thing. Like when they get a good look on the back of the baseball card, they're like, that's it. That's me.
That's it for good.
That's me. That's what I am for the rest of my career. Nobody touched that. I think it's part of their contract with like Tops.
I would like to see what listeners think. Tweet at us at @Andrew_Rotondi and at @ScottRynan. Is Mike Ford fat? Yes or no? Let us know. Yeah. Stanton is pretty close, quote, pretty close to seeing live pitching, but no date has been set. So that's fun.
He was taking batting practice though this weekend.
All right. In Seattle.
Yeah, hitting. That's right. This weekend. It feels like a weekend for me right now. He's hitting lasers in Seattle at batting practice. So the guy is taking full swings.
Not at 95% gravity.
Not hurt.
No one talked about it. He was hitting home runs, but it was 95% gravity.
It's fine.
Severino's going to start for Scranton on Sunday. This is huge news. This is his first rehab start. How many do you think they're
going to
give him?
Is he going to Scranton now or Trenton?
It's Scranton. They updated
it. Okay. Because he was going to Tampa.
He was in Tampa throwing sim games, and then he was going to go to Trenton, and then they updated it today to Scranton.
It's interesting because I just saw that they canceled the GCL League, the Gulf Coast League, because of the hurricane coming. They stopped the season. The season is then short. There will be no winter. That just happened. That's interesting. I don't know. So now nobody can rehab down there. So now you got to move up and do different things. But no, the fact that he'll be there in Scranton, like obviously they're comfortable with where he is. Again, this is another guy who's going to have to work through rust.
Well, I don't think AA or AAA really makes
it doesn't
a
matter.
Difference.
No. But I'm saying he's pitching in the game.
My question is, how many do you think they're going to give him? Is it going to be one or two or three?
Innings?
No. Rehab assignments.
Yeah, I think I'd say two. It depends on what happens after that too, how he's stretched out and how he's feeling. But I think probably max three.
I'd say two or three, which means we're going to see him either the week of September 9th or the week of like September 15th.
Yeah.
Because I think they're going to want to get him a couple before the season.
Oh, absolutely.
In the majors. Yeah. So I don't think it's going to be just one in the minors.
I don't think so either. Unless they see enough where they're like, you know what, he's totally healthy, throwing at full speed.
But the problem with that is, but the problem with that is just reps, is just length.
It depends on what you're looking for from him. Again, if you're coming up to the minors, if you're fully healthy, bottom line, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter where he gets the rehabs. So if he gets the rehabs down there, great. If they think he's fully good and can go and be, while he's rehabbing, be an opener and be that guy, why not? What's the difference? If you're trying to boost the confidence and he's pitching well and he feels good and everything is good, then I could see them saying no issue. I don't expect that because I think they're handling him with kid gloves at this point and they know it's at risk. So you don't want any extra exertion for him coming up.
The timetable is so tight at this point, they have to be perfect.
So that's why
you can't mess this up.
Right, exactly. And so I would feel more comfortable personally if they just let him do that in Scranton, got his worked out his things, build the confidence up, build the body up to a point where he's enduring, soreness the next day and feeling fine with that. And then 2 days later, and then 3 days later, and then feeling back to normal and where he wants to be up in the pros. Cause I want him to go back to the pros and I want him to get back into a routine that he's used to. I don't want him to go in there and like totally change up what he's used to. Then we have all of a sudden, he's late to a game and we're starting the game at 1:05 or 7:05, and Luis Severino is running to the mound at 7:02. I don't want to see that.
It was a 7:40.
Whatever
start.
It is,
that's why he was confused.
I don't want to see any of that confusion. I want to see him getting into his rhythm and like, let's just figure this out in AAA. We're at a good place. We're with this team. Everybody knows this next man up, so that's fine. The next guy will be up, and Severino will just continue to get himself right in AAA, and I'm totally good with that.
Yeah, Monty's going to get a start in Scranton this weekend as well, and Betances is still doing sim games. And speaking of next man up, we got some guys coming up for the September call-ups. Boone said today Clint Frazier is likely to be a September call-up. I think that was obvious. People are excited to see him again. Other guys to look out for, Chance Adams, Loaisiga, obviously, Valera, who's been up. A couple guys who are not on the 40-man who would have to be put on the 40-man to be added, but Devi Garcia, who we know was talked about, but it kind of seems like with the trend of this team and the trend of Garcia, I don't know if that's going to be the case anymore. Michael King and JP Fireisen as well are just names to keep an eye out for.
Michael King's been pitching really well too. He's
coming off injury. He was wasn't he the AAA pitcher of the year last year? Didn't he win some award like that?
Yeah, and he came off that injury. You don't have Ben Heller on this list either. There's other guys.
Ben Heller.
Heller
is also not on the 40 man.
Yes, he is. I'm going to look this up while we're talking. But the Valera is a guy that, to me, is not going to be up at all. Like, that's just – Tyro Estrada is another guy that
– he's on the injured list.
That could – I know, but where on the injured list is he? Like, I don't see Valera coming up. There's
why? He's on the 40-man, and now we might need an infielder this weekend.
Yeah, maybe this weekend. But when September call-ups happen and we have to start, like, moving people around, like, that's not a guy that's sticking around. Just not. There's especially if Urshela is completely healthy. Chance Adams has had we know what Chance Adams is. He's not getting, I don't think he's going to get another real opportunity with the Yankees unless they're just trying to eat some innings and doing things like that. But Loaisiga Garcia, I still think that is a very good possibility. And then Michael King is interesting. Fireisen, we'll see with Fireisen. But he's been pitching well too.
So Heller, the reason he's not technically
injured,
because he was
on the injured list?
He's on the 60-day IL.
Okay.
Which means when they reactivate him from the 60-day IL, they can either not put him on the 40-man or they have to put him on the 40-man and take someone off.
Right, but if they don't put him on the 40-man, then there's a lot more implications with that. So for all intents and purposes, I think he's on the 40-man. So he doesn't need to be on the 40. They don't need to take him off the 40-man when he's rehabbing in AAA either?
Nope. That's the beauty of the 60-day IL. That's why they put Stanton on it.
Right. I thought there was a service time kicker somewhere in there too, but okay. Well, that's good. Yeah. But he's another guy I fully expect to be on the 40.
So this is something you wanted to talk about. This was a stat that went out today.
So funny how you set that up.
Some starters since August 1st and their ERAs. Tanaka's 3.31. Paxton 3.57. Good, good. Herman 3.86. Good. Marcus Stroman 4.91. Not good. Trevor Bauer 7.62. Not good. Good, very not good. So
not good at all. Not good at all. No. I think this is an interesting when you see this, and I honestly wasn't even going to look at what the you know, I didn't even request what the Yankees were doing, the guys that were on the Yankees roster, because they were going to be there anyway. That really, to me, had no bearing. But when you see the guys that everybody wanted to extend themselves for, wanted Brian Cashman to go out there and just trade the farm, just go and do everything, like throw the bank at these guys, and then there will be a magic ticket to go into the World Series. It's just not as clear as day as that. And this, I'm not looking at these numbers and saying told you so, because I'm not doing that, because I wanted these guys. I wanted them for the right reason, for the right price. I didn't want to totally overextend for them, and I understood why he didn't go after them, because of the overextension. Like, to me, I don't think Trevor Bauer was a real opportunity anyway, because I think that Cincinnati gave a much better deal than the Yankees were even close to being offered. But I do think Stroman was a possibility, and I think that they asked for too much, and then Brian Cashman turned his nose up on a guy that has been inconsistent, and that was the reason why he didn't excite me. Like, okay, I'll take him if we can get him for something that's manageable, but he's been so inconsistent in his career that I just don't trust that guy. And proof is in the pudding right now. We're looking at these guys struggling. So it's very easy to go and say Cashman did the right thing. I'm not going to go as far as that, because I still think he should have made a move and solidified it. But I don't fault him for not doing whatever he had to do to get one of these guys, because I didn't think they were those guys to just lose the farm over.
Yeah, I don't think anyone was saying
that. I think a lot of people were saying that.
Well, no. No one's saying automatic World Series had they traded for any of those guys. But I think a lot of people were saying what you and I were both saying, which is you got to do everything in your power to maximize your World Series odds. And I don't think you can assume that if they acquired Stroman or acquired Bauer, that they would have the exact same stats. In fact, I can tell you they wouldn't have the exact same stats, because they wouldn't have faced those exact same teams. So it's all... like, this is very convenient. It's a very convenient, you know, early checkbox win for Brian Cashman. But I still would like to have Stroman and Bauer on this roster right now going into the playoffs. And I think you would too. And I think most Yankee fans would as well. And to further drive home the point.
That's not very good, but keep going.
We had said from the beginning, if they went out and added Marcus Stroman, that's not guaranteeing a World Series. They're still going to have to get Tanaka and Paxton to improve.
Yeah, no, that's why I said at the beginning, like when you're throwing out the Yankees numbers, like to me that wasn't, it had really not much to do with what I was talking about, because it's beyond those three guys that were the problem. And like, yeah, you add a Stroman or a Bauer, then you have a better opportunity of getting a guy that can go with quality starts, but you're not guaranteeing it. It's not a top level guy like if you're getting a Bumgarner at his peak. Like, you're not getting that guy. That's not happening. So no. Trevor Bauer, like, literally could be just like pissed off that he's in Cincinnati and pitching bad.
I honestly think that's the case.
Like, or just like really, really really hate Sonny Gray, and like he's annoying. And he's just like,
how did
what?
I end up in Cincinnati? Yeah. What is going on? I was on a playoff team, and now
but also
I'm
part of the reason why I didn't trust that too, because he's a mental case. For these exact reasons. Marcus Stroman, I think he's just an inconsistent pitcher and peaks. I don't think he's as good as a lot of people think he is. I think he hits some hot streaks and is exciting to watch, because he's like throws a lot of emotion out there, and like that's cool and fun. But the rest of it, like, just he has not been a consistent pitcher in a long time. So the fact that these other guys are still pitching better, That is something that you're looking at, and you're saying, well,
it's the most important thing. It's the most important
thing. But it's also something
that
you have to look at, and you have to say, okay, we believed in these guys. We expect them to be better. They were probably
giving these guys away if they acquired someone.
That's not what I mean. I'm talking about the front office saying, well, this is where we are. We have to either acquire somebody or we don't. And what we have seen from these guys, not Herman. Herman's been phenomenal, but Paxton and Tanaka. These guys have not lived up to what we think they can be. And we still think they are those guys. And because they had convictions about that and who they were, they stuck to those convictions and knew that they would be back. Because the game of baseball is a long game, and you got to stick with it. And if you don't, then you got bigger problems. So it's like bailing on a stock when it's down, you know, and then 2 days later it goes flying through the roof. You got to be patient.
That was another Seinfeld episode. Yeah, and I think even if they have these guys, Tanaka, Paxton, Herman, and then whatever Severino can give them, unfortunately, that might still not be enough to get them to a World Series. We'll see. The Yankees, there was another interesting stat I wanted to mention. The Yankees are now 13 straight games. They've won 13 straight games when they're facing a left-handed starting pitcher.
That's great. I mean, that proves the way our lineup looks.
Look at the lineup. A lot of right-handed hitters. That makes sense. And I think that's great if you're going up against the Dodgers, who have Ryu and Kershaw. And, you know, great. And they beat them over the weekend. But the Astros are a right-handed
pitching
rotation.
Team.
The Indians are a right-handed pitching team. The Rays, if you face them in a series, they do have Snell, who's hopefully coming back. But Morton, Glasnow, Chirinos, like all these guys are right-handed pitchers. So, you know, that's a great stat. They've beat up on lefties. A lot of the American League is right-handed heavy. And we saw the Oakland A's not even throw out great starting pitchers last week. And Roark, Fires. And they're right-handed. And they shut the Yankees down.
Well, they didn't like playing in Oakland, so you can't count that.
Right. The drums, the noise, the vuvuzelas.
No, it had nothing to do with that. It was just a dump. They're like, the amenities are terrible, so we're not going to do what we need to do.
Where's the post-game buffet?
Where's the fog? Where's the fog machine? Where are my lights? What are we doing here? Why are there rats in my clubhouse or in my locker? I don't like this.
Yeah. Are the Yankees, though, you know, we were talking about maximizing World Series odds. Fangraphs World Series odds as we sit here today, 29% Astros, that's the leading candidate. The Dodgers at 19% and the Yankees at 13%. Are the Yankees not getting enough credit? Are they not getting the credit they deserve?
No, it just, can we review? This is like a great time. We don't have it right now, but maybe on the next show we can do this. We can look back at all those numbers that we had or in our show notes from the beginning of the season and look to see where all the nerds put the percentages at and like see all those things. You know, all the numbers that mean absolutely nothing, pretty close to what these numbers mean. Best chance to win the World Series. Astros 29%, Yankees 13%. Why does that number matter at all? Seriously, what does that number tell you?
Oh, okay. Are you asking why does the number matter
at all? It
means
nothing.
Why did they come up with this? Like, how did they arrive at these statistics?
I don't even care. It means nothing. It's so
stupid. I agree.
It's so stupid.
People freak about it, though.
Who gives
a
shit?
Freak because they think the Yankees are being disrespectful.
Whatever. These numbers, you're pulling them from somewhere that I don't care about. And wherever Fangraphs is pulling these numbers to get to a point where they have a 29% for the Astros and 13%. Is that based on talent? Is that based on like what they've done in the last like however many games?
It's based on what you've done and then what projections are for the rest of the season.
Are they projecting
what the potential road to the World Series could be?
Oh yeah.
And they're not going to have two American League teams as the top ones because that just doesn't make sense logically.
Yeah, but why is there such a discretion? Why is there such a discrepancy between the Astros and the Yankees when they're
But
they're tied for home field advantage. Like that doesn't really say much. It's a stupid number. It's double the percentage. And you're telling me that how do they know who's coming back? How do they know what the injuries are going to be like? How do they know what these pitchers? What if Tanaka goes on even more run? What if Aaron Judge doesn't miss a ball for the rest of the season? Like there's just too many things that they're just making up because that's what it is. We're making up numbers now. It's freaking annoying. These percentages are stupid.
You sound like John and Susan. And that brings us to our final topic. I have a confession to make with John and Susan, and it hit me because I've been listening to a lot of John and Susan on this road trip because of the late night games. They're getting a little unbearable. The broadcasts have turned into them complaining, and it's fun when John Sterling doesn't know if it's a home run or not. Like I can live with that. Like that's sort of like the fun. That just sort of comes with the territory of an 81-year-old announcer. Or Susan freaking out about certain things and being her lovely freak out self. Yeah. But when they sit there for five straight innings and complain about, I hear the drum, John. I hear the drum just like you hear the drum. I'm listening to the game. You do not need to remind me about the drum in between every pitch.
The irony of you calling out someone who's unbearable for complaining is thick. Thick.
My complaints are rooted in realness.
Oh, that drum is real. It's in their face. It's real. They have been complaining about things like this for as long as I can remember.
No, it's not been this bad.
I think you're listening to them more.
I think they're tired. I think they're tired of the grind of 162 games. That's why we saw Sterling take off a week.
I think he's just over it in the first place. Yeah, but they have been complaining about this for a long time. The fact that you're complaining about people complaining is ridiculous, is unbelievable. It's one of the more unbelievable things I've ever heard in my life. You're literally complaining about people being negative. That's what's happening right now.
Oh, that's not negative.
That is negative. When you complain, is it positive? Are we being positive when we're complaining about things? No, we're being negative. We're being
a complaint isn't necessarily negative. When they're complaining,
oh, I love the drum.
When they're complaining about the drum, that's not necessarily being negative. Like, no one likes the drum. No Yankee fan likes the drum.
I don't mind the drum. I don't hear the drum. Drum doesn't bother me.
Susan also, the other day when Judge hit his home run to center field and it went off the back of the batter's box, the batter's wall, Statcast measured it like 440 feet or something like that. And she went on this long tirade about how she doesn't understand how Statcast came up with that number. And what she arrived at after a long thing about it hit the wall. How could it have gone 460 feet if it hit a wall? That wall is not 60 feet behind the 401 foot marker. I don't understand Statcast. That's why Statcast is stupid. That's an exact quote from her. That is why Statcast is stupid.
There's a math equation there with trajectory and angle.
She doesn't like trajectory. Yeah.
I think some of it's an imperfect science, and that's why they're moving to the Hawkeye technology. And I think we'll have a much more perfect science next year, which I'm sure we'll find areas to complain about. But, you know, whatever. That doesn't bother me. I mean, I think technology and people and slowness and, you know, whatever else they openly can complain about, they do.
They openly spit in the face of analytics. They laugh
of course
at
they
shifts.
Do. That's fine.
They laugh
they've,
at
they've
analytics.
They've laughed at shifts since the beginning, because it was new. They're baseball purists. They all laugh at that stuff.
Yeah, that annoys me.
Well, I mean, that's not new. That's not new. They've been doing that for years.
Okay, maybe they've been doing it for years, and you're right. Maybe it's just because I listened to them for like two straight weeks.
I think you've been listening to them more because you've been in the car more. You've been going back and forth to Rhode Island.
I've been in the car more, but yeah, and then the late games.
And the late games.
I've always been
You're falling asleep to John and Susan, so they're in your dreams.
I've always been a fan of John and Susan. Like, people bash them. People get on Sterling for his gimmicky home run calls. And I'm like, this is sports entertainment. Like, chill out. It doesn't have to be buttoned up every single broadcast. So I get that. But they're losing a little bit this year. And I hate to say it.
Yeah, well, I think that baseball has kind of gone past them a little bit as well, because the amount of numbers and analytics that are in the game today, it's a different game. It's a different way you have to talk about it. Like, if you think that any of...
I don't want them talking about analytics. Frankly, I don't want them talking about analytics.
But it's part of the game.
I just don't want them to spit in the face of it.
But it's part of the game. And I think that you have to have a complete understanding of them to truly appreciate them. And to be honest, I don't think they've taken that level of commitment to like go in and really like embrace those numbers.
Fine. I don't expect them to know all of the different metrics on Fangraphs page. I just don't expect them to completely disregard it and call it stupid just because they don't understand.
When you don't know something and you don't understand it, like the default thing is to think it's dumb. Especially for an older person.
I get that.
So what's happening. It's just not unexpected.
Okay. Any Yankees coming home, thankfully coming home after a long road trip for six games and then another 10-game road trip against Boston, Detroit, and Toronto. Any final words, Scott? We got a big weekend. I'm going to be at the game on Friday night. If you guys are going to the game on Friday, hit me up. We can meet up for a beer. And just like a lot of people will be at the game on Saturday for the BP crew event.
A lot of people there. Yeah, I'm going to be there on Saturday and Sunday. I got my family coming on Sunday. That'll be fun. Haven't done that in a couple of years, so that'll be cool. But yeah.
Is Kemp's
going on Sunday. Yeah, man. It's going
to
be his first.
So first trip to Yankee Stadium.
First trip to Yankee Stadium.
First baseball.
Outside,
first real baseball game.
Outside of Bevan's belly. Because the first baseball game, which we both.
Oh, right.
She was pregnant. So,
yeah,
you know, technically.
And then he went to an aquarium where a baseball game happened.
And
now he's going to a real in action, basically.
Now he's going to a real place with real players and, yeah, you know, has like a real field with no roof and no DJ and no purple ceiling and no fish and no dolphins or stingrays, whatever the hell they had in the back.
Nice. Cool. That's going to be fun.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun.
Submit mailbag questions for the next episode. Call up the voicemail line 646-480-0342. Make them good.
Bring it.
Tell us Tell us about Judge getting hot. Tell us about the Yankees finishing above 500 after a rough couple games on the road trip. Tell us about this weekend against Oakland. What do you want to see against a potential playoff team?
I'm curious of what people think that rotation is going to look like as we get to the playoffs. Like, that's a very big topic of discussion. What is that playoff? Like, if you're looking at what's happening today and you think that, let's just assume Severino comes back and he's a 4-5 inning guy. What does that playoff rotation look like?
That's even pushing it. 4-5 innings, I think.
Well, let's just for conversation's sake, if he is that type of guy, say 4 innings. What does your playoff rotation look like? Give me like the first 3 in the order, because I think that matters too. I know JJ, when he was on here with me, he was talking about not having Herman in the first game, but in the second game because he trusts him more and wants him to be there in case things go bad. So I thought that was interesting. I would prefer a veteran guy in that second game personally. But what do you think? Give us 646-480-0342. Give us all that stuff that Andrew said and playoff rotation. I think that's a super good topic for conversation.
Awesome. We will talk to you on Monday.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.